Welcome back to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. Our producer is Robin Fly. In the last half hour, we talked about SB 8, a bill banning abortions after 6 weeks in Texas. We also heard about new restrictions on abortion in Montana and Planned Parenthood's efforts to push back legally. In this half hour, we're going to focus on how women have and still do self-manage abortions. We'll start with an interview we recorded in 2018 with Laura Kaplan, author of The Story of Jane, and then we'll talk with Susan Yano of Women Help Women. Let's get started with our archived but perhaps disturbingly timely and relevant interview with Laura Kaplan. With us now is Laura Kaplan, lifelong activist and author of The Story of Jane, the legendary underground feminist abortion service. Laura, briefly, please tell us the story of Jane. What was the abortion landscape like for women in the very early 1970s, and how did Jane emerge and evolve and eventually end?
Well, abortion was illegal in the United States, except in a very few places. In the summer of 1970, New York state legalized abortion. There were also less restrictive abortion laws by that time in California and Hawaii. Things were beginning to change in 1970, but when the group started in the late 60s, abortion was illegal every place in the United States. It grew out of the women's liberation movement. I don't know how much you want me to talk about this history of women getting together and looking at problems that had been unaddressed because they were women's problems and nobody was looking at women's problems. And so women started talking to each other in the early days of the women's liberation movement. So we're talking late 60s. And, you know, before that, all of us, pretty much anything anybody knew was, besides rumors of a doctor here or there, was that every once in a while a woman had an abortion and she died from it. And we saw the pictures of the crumpled bodies in alleys and all of that. When women started talking to each other, they discovered that not only was the search for abortion not rare. In fact, many, many women had looked for abortions, but many women had found illegal practitioners and they were alive and talking about it. And so groups all over the country started organizing referral services. So these services would suss out whoever the illegal practitioners were by word of mouth, you know, find these guys, and they were pretty much all guys, all men, and then find out who were the reputable ones that you could rely on, who wouldn't take money and actually not perform the abortion or demand sexual favors in exchange for an abortion or botch an abortion. And groups all over, women's groups all over the country started referring women to those better practitioners. So that's just how we in Chicago started, same as everybody else all over the country. What was different about the Abortion Counseling Service of Chicago's Women Liberation Union was that we evolved fairly quickly so that we took control of the process. So within a year and a half, women in the group were learning to perform abortions themselves. So these were DNCs and induced miscarriages, and we evolved into an underground abortion service working 3 days a week, performing 25 to slightly over 30 abortions a day for a very low cost once we took over the process. I'm glossing over all the ins and outs of how that happened, just to get you to, I think, where you want me to go. We folded A few months after Roe v. Wade was decided, when the first clinics opened in Chicago in the spring of 1973, and we estimate, and because we were so illegal, we kept no records. So everything I tell you is how we remember it and what we're estimating. So we estimate we performed maybe over 11,000 illegal abortions in the city of Chicago for low or little cost. Once we, the women in the group, took over, we lowered our price to $100 of what women could afford, and we estimate that we got between $40 and $50 per abortion average. Lots of women paid nothing. People paid what they could. But our top price was $100.
So the women...
Does that tell you...
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
It does. So the women in Jane were not doctors, but learned to do abortions, and being able to do abortions solved the problem of being pregnant and not wanting to be pregnant for maybe 11,000 women.
If you could find your way to Jane.
If you could find your way to Jane.
Right, which was our code name. You know, that way we could call people back, and if somebody else answered the phone, we could say, just tell her Jane called, and then we weren't giving up anything, any information to somebody who shouldn't have it. So, and nobody in the group was named Jane, and Jane is sort of like Dick and Jane, Jane Doe, you know, it's every woman's name.
So,
the evolution was, we found this one doctor who was willing to work very closely with us. And at some point, it was revealed to the group that he, in fact, was not a doctor. And at that point, besides people freaking out and thinking, that's it, we've got a fold, we're just like the back alley people, the core group, they're... feeling was, well, if he can do it and he's not a doctor, then we can do it too, and we can charge a lot less than what he was charging. My sense is, although nobody remembered this exactly, is that it was at the point that the first woman in the group was learning to do abortions that information was divulged to the group at large that he was not a doctor. Because I'm sure she thought, if I'm going to get folks to accept that we can do it ourselves, they have to first accept that you don't have to be a doctor to do good work. We'd been working with this guy for like a year and a half, and the information we got from post-abortion checkups was excellent. You know, we had minimal problems, and so we had good success with somebody who in fact was not a doctor, but trained by a doctor. And then he trained a few women in the group, and they went on and trained other women in the group.
So you took matters into your own hands. What was, you have written that you wanted this experience to be affirming and empowering for women. So what was Jane's sort of vision for feminist health, women's health, and how has that played out since Roe v. Wade?
Well, I don't know that we had a vision. You know, I always laugh that I can't remember one meeting where we had a political discussion. Mm. But because we weren't part of the medical establishment, we were free to create our practice based on how we would want to be treated and what was best for the women who came to us desperate. I mean, you'd have to be pretty desperate to turn your life over to a bunch of strangers who were not pretending to be anything other than what they were. Mm. So, you know, our practice evolved, and this preceded the women's health movement. Our practice evolved based on both how we felt we'd been mistreated by the medical establishment and what would make us feel better, and our interactions with the many women who came to us for help and what made them feel better. So, you know, for instance, we didn't use drapes. You know, what's the point, you know, when you go to the gynecologist and they put the sheet over your lap so they're between your legs. You can't really see them. It's like your body is divided up. We didn't do that. You know, our sense and our feeling was, this is about this woman on this bed at this time, and it's her body, you know? It's all one thing. There's no separation here. The medical establishment does this, you know, isolating thing, mm-hmm. the part of the body to be done. And we felt that that was, you know, kind of objectifying. So we didn't do that. And we explained everything. And we explained everything beforehand. And then during the actual abortion, we would explain as much as the woman wanted to hear about what was going on. And if she preferred to talk about her kids or her school or, you know, some pin she was wearing or whatever she wanted to talk about, that is what we talked about. So there was always someone sitting by her, holding her hand and engaging her in whatever way she wanted to be engaged. And then we did a lot of follow-up afterwards to make sure she was okay. And we had post-abortion meds and all of that. You know, we learned that if you walk into a medical supply company in a lab coat and you got cash in your pocket, they'll pretty much sell you anything if you sound like you know what you're talking about.
Good to know.
So, you know.
So, Laura, you wrote about this in the story of Jane, and what kinds of responses have you gotten from women who have read your book, especially in areas where there's not easy access to abortion?
I mean, I only know from the people I've talked to, and I can't divide up the places where there isn't easy access from where there is easy access. There's so few places where there is easy access. But, you know, like, a clinic in Iowa brought me out there to do a fundraiser, but the people who came were all supporters of the clinic. So, you know, they had access
at that. Right.
So I really can't answer that question. It's not like I've gotten letters saying, oh, thank you so much, or, you know, who the hell are you, or anything like that. So I can't really answer that question. I think it's my sense is that it's really, I've spoken a lot to abortion funds, and for them it's really inspiring because it's a lineage that we share because we started that way, you know, pretty much doing what current abortion funds that are all over the country. I don't know if there's any in Montana.
Yeah, but there are.
What current abortion funds do is what we started out doing. We just evolved in a very unique and unusual way. And I think that was a function of some of the people in the group in the very core. You know, I describe our structure as a series of concentric circles, and the closer you were to the center, the more you knew and the more power you had, of course, because you knew more. So the opportunity presented itself. And I think our guy, who I call Nick in the book, I think he saw the writing on the wall that, you know, he said to me when I interviewed him, he said, you know, the first abortion I did for free, I knew the jig was up and it was time for him to be moving on. He was to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were going to beat him into discounting more and more abortions and doing ones for free, then it wasn't going to be such a moneymaker for him. And I think he had also a lot of pride in what he did. And so showing somebody else how to do something is directly related to your own pride in what you do. Mm-hmm. It's like I teach, not formally, but I've taught a lot of friends, women, how to split wood. You know, I have a, you know, I say to them, I'm 5 feet tall. If I can do this, you can do this. And, you know, it's that, you know, you laugh, but it's all part of the same trajectory, you know, of getting over your sense of incompetence and your sense that you're not good enough or you can't. And, you know, we as women are, in those days especially, were raised with this very defined sense of what our roles were going to be in life and what we could do and what we couldn't do. So any place where you break out of those strictures is a place of empowerment and growth. So I take a lot of pleasure in doing it, and part of it is because I've been doing it for years and years and years, so I have a sense of my own competence, which I want to share with others. But it always comes out of a place of pride in terms of teaching, I think.
Okay.
Personal pride.
In terms of abortion that may be outside the medical establishment, the abortion pill and the internet have changed some of the options for women who may be looking for abortions. So even though the technology may be different, though, what are some of the lessons of Jane that you think still apply?
I think anytime a group of women get together to help other women and help them see their own decision-making power and recognize it for what it is, and not just, oh, this happened to me and I'm a victim of circumstance, but rather I'm an actor in my own life, is a really important place to be. And it changes the experience from one, you know how when you go to the doctor, we're all sort of inculcated with how we're supposed to behave in a medical situation, which is that we give over our power to the professionals who are going to take control and they'll make the decisions of what's best for us. And so where you have groups of people getting together to say, no, this is about you and your decision making, and you're taking power into your own hands and saying, this is going to be my life and not this, is a place of personal growth for each of those women, potentially. I mean, I'm not saying to you that every woman who came through the service, which is how we refer to ourselves, went through this transformative moment, because that certainly isn't true. I mean, some women just, they didn't want to hear anything we had to say. Just give me the abortion and let me go home. But for some women, I think it really was a revelatory experience. And certainly, you know, a number, more than one or two, but quite a few women joined the group after their own abortions. So there was that sense of, you know, this is something I can then share with others, and I can use it as a tool for personal empowerment for other people. I don't know. Did that answer your question?
I think that's a wonderful answer. Laura Kaplan, author of The Story of Jane, thank you for joining us. You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. Our producer is Robin Fly. In the first half hour, we heard from advocates in Texas and Montana about threats to pregnant people's ability to access abortion and how we can push back. At the beginning of this half hour, we played an archived but timely interview with Laura Kaplan, author of The Story of Jane, an abortion service that provided an estimated 11,000 safe, affordable abortions to women in Chicago before the 1973 Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade legalized most abortions in the U.S. With the advent of the quote-unquote abortion pill, the technology has changed, but there are many women in the U.S. today who choose to, or need to, look for ways to have an abortion outside the clinical setting. With us now is Susan Yano of Women Help Women. Welcome, Susan. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you again.
I would love it if you could talk with us a little bit about Women Help Women, and I'm right now particularly interested in this moment on your project SAS, Self-Managed Abortion, Safe and Supported.
Sure. Women Help Women was founded in 2014 by a group of feminists from four different countries with the philosophy that abortion pills belong in the hands of people who need it. In 2015, after the election of President number Orange 45, whose name will not pass my lips, my colleagues in Poland said, you know, we lost abortion in Poland and you're going to lose it in the US too. We need to create a project that faces the US. So in February of 2016, we launched SAS, Self-Managed Abortion, Safe and Supported. Abortionpillinfo.org is our website. And the goal of SAS is to make sure that every person in the United States has information about what abortion pills are and how to use them safely and effectively with or without a clinician.
So let's clarify. Tell us what abortion pills are.
Sure. So in the year 2000, a regimen of mifepristone plus misoprostol was approved in the U.S. And at most clinics and abortion-providing sites across the United States, that regimen is available. And about 50% of people in the first 10 weeks or 11 weeks of pregnancy choose to use pills rather than have an aspiration abortion, which is sometimes called a surgical abortion, for a whole range of reasons. However, what's important to know, that regimen is one mifepristone, which is swallowed. And then 24 to 36 hours later, at their own home, the pregnant person uses four misoprostol, dissolving them in the cheek for 30 minutes. It's the misoprostol that causes the cramping, the miscarriage. But what's important to know is that misoprostol alone, with more tablets, can also cause an abortion. And since the 1980s, people around the world have been using 12 tablets of misoprostol, which is used four pills under the tongue, let it dissolve for 30 minutes without swallowing, wait 3 hours, do it again, wait 3 hours, do it again, each time letting the pills dissolve 30 minutes. And the reason it's important for people to know about the misoprostol alone protocol is because misoprostol is far more easy to get. It is used for a number of gynecological processes. It's used to treat an incomplete miscarriage. It's used to treat arthritis. It's used to treat arthritis in dogs. It's used by pet breeders, cat, dog, horse breeders, when an animal is pregnant and they want it to miscarry the litter for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I don't think they call it a litter when it's a horse, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So people who are seeking abortion pills on their own need to know that there are two different regimens. And all of this information is available at abortionpillinfo.org. Also at abortionpillinfo.org is information about how people have found these medicines in the United States. And we know that just in the last month in Texas, because of the new ban there, thousands of people are looking for and finding these pills. We know because they're coming to our website. And it's really important for your listeners to know how safe it is. There are dozens and dozens of studies on safe self-managed abortion, and the pills work just as well regardless of the source.
Okay, so we will put a link to abortionpillinfo.org when we put this show up on the website. You have some legal, not advice, but information about how people minimize legal risks. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It's really important to understand that abortion pills, whether one is using mifepristone plus misoprostol or misoprostol alone, essentially cause a miscarriage. Miscarriage happens in 15 to 20% of all pregnancies in the first 12 weeks. So if a person is using pills on their own and is concerned about they're bleeding too much, or they're just not sure if it worked, or for whatever reason wants to see a doctor, they need to understand that if they say they took pills, in many states they could be criminalized. Because many states have laws that can be used to prosecute people who do this without a clinician. But if the person says, I think I had a miscarriage or I'm bleeding, I don't know why, this treatment for miscarriage complications is exactly the same as the treatment for abortion pill complications. And there is no test of blood or urine to detect the pills as long as people used the mifepristone. They swallowed the mifepristone, so it went through the stomach, and they used the misoprostol in either the cheek or under the tongue. And that's why in the self-managed context, we don't recommend using the misoprostol vaginally. It will work, but crumbs could be found in the vagina, which would be evidence that a person had taken, had used pills.
I had no idea. I had not even thought of that. So on your website, I see that you have a hotline number people can call if they're having questions about miscarriages or self-managed abortion.
So what we do is we list a number of resources. Women Help Women and the SAS Project work with emails. There is a secure portal where somebody can contact us and they will get back a randomized web link. They will go to that link. The answer will be there. And then that will be blanked out after 7 days. The reason for that is 24 people in our country have been arrested for using these pills, and two of them were prosecuted based on evidence in their electronic devices and their phones. So this will leave no trace. However, there is a hotline that is staffed by clinicians that people can contact by text or voice if they want information. There's also an organization called ReproCare. And links to all of those are on our website if people want a voice or a text answer.
Okay, great. And can you tell us, I see a link here to something called the Yuki app. Can you, I don't
yes.
know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
You are, because the name comes from eucalyptus. And the name of the app is E-U-K-I, and everybody should have it in their phones. It tracks your periods. It tracks the variations in sexual interest and sexual pleasure. It has information about contraception, has information about STI treatment, and it has information about how to use abortion pills. It is a private app. In other words, unlike commercially developed apps where your information can be harvested, and you may have heard about the case in Missouri where the state looked at the period trackers of people going to the Planned Parenthood and then contacted them. Mm. That can't happen with Yuki because it was developed by a grant. We can't access the information except for how many people have downloaded it for free from the Google Play Store or the Apple Store. That's the only information we have is numbers of people who have the app. And there, it's available in Spanish and English. And it is a wonderful tool for people to have. It also has a secure passcode system. So for example, if your password is 1234 and you have an intrusive parent, you can create a second screen. And if your parent says, show me your app, give me your password, you can say, oh, it's 678. And that person will see a different set of data.
That is fascinating. You know, this. I'm going to take a look at that. Meanwhile, I think the abortionpillinfo.org is just so valuable, especially right now. Susan Yano, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure, and I hope all the people listening will take a look at the website, take a look at the app. Even if you don't think you'll ever need an abortion, this is information everybody should have.
You've been listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm Dr. Nurse Nancy. Our producer is Robin Fly. Today, we've been talking about the abortion landscape in Montana, Texas, and nationwide. You can hear Body Politic on the first and third Monday of every month at 1 o'clock at 95.9 FM in Bozeman, or stream us live. Most shows are also available anytime at kgvm.org.